Hey everyone, we're gonna go ahead and get started. We've got a forum, so I'll call this into order for a pre-council meeting. We've got a presentation from CPD and Chief Schlute, I believe you're kicking us off.
Hi, everybody. So I think all of you know most of our command staff, but just in case you don't, we do have some new faces, and so I'm going to have them introduce themselves really quick and tell you what they're in charge of.
Matt Stevens, I'm the deputy chief, so I'm the second down from Jill, so when she's gone, not available, then I step
into
that. I step into that.
My name is Rick Perrell. I'm over at Professional Standards Bureau, and I have the Academy, Internal Affairs. Those are the big ones.
Policy, the PIOs.
Policy. Yeah.
Everybody wants Rick's job.
And I'm Mark Fitzgerald, so I'm over our patrol bureau.
I'm Lance Bollinger, I'm over our investigative bureau, so I have all our criminal investigation and also all our special investigations, which is narcotics, street crimes, SWAT, etc.
Assistant Chief Hunter couldn't be here tonight, but he is over kind of our patrol support operations, so things like our park police, our homeless outreach team, our school resource officers, special events, things of that nature. So we have this great online data tool that we've been working hard to refine. I think there's still some refinements we'd like to do to it. So feel free to jot down suggestions or things because we'll definitely take those into consideration. But Assistant Chief Fitzgerald is going to talk to you in depth and answer questions about how best to use the tool, and a lot of the, you're gonna hear the word nuance a lot. So just be prepared for that. And I think it, your preference, but I think it's easy. Yeah, it's they want you to use a microphone. It'd probably be easier if you guys ask questions as they come up, because it is gonna get really confusing probably if you don't.
Councilman Foster, we have about an hour, a little under an hour for this. Is that?
I wasn't given an amount of time.
Yes.
That should do the trick.
Yeah. Okay. So, because we can get as far deep into the weeds as you folks want to go on this, but please, I hope this will be a little bit more of a conversation than a really kind of instructional training deal. So, to start out with the packet that the papers I provided you here is just summary of all of the talking points I kind of wanted to make. I thought about just giving you kind of like cheat sheets to walk away from with just some of the definitions, but then I ended up just giving you everything so that way you guys have some notes to refer back to at some point if that's valuable for you. So I thought we'd go through like kind of crime stats generally from the police's perspective, then get into the history of crime reporting, because I think that talks a little bit about why some of the way things are counted the way they are. Go into our crime data dashboard, which is really the focus of this I was asked to kind of give some instruction on how to use this crime data dashboard so you can look at it yourselves or give guidance in that regard. Just some kind of takeaways or recommendations I have with the crime data. So the first thing I want to kind of just start out with by saying is that defining the terms is everything for us. That when the terms are undefined, you're going to get different answers to the same question because we're defining the terms differently. So the easiest way or the best example that I think that I can come up with is our calls for service data. So somebody says, hey, how many calls for service does the Columbia Police Department respond on in a year? It's like, well, that's a great question, but calls for service is still too much of an undefined term. That calls for service could mean calls where a citizen calls 911 or 311 requesting a police officer to come. It could include self-initiated contacts, which means like traffic stops. Does a traffic stop count for calls for service? Well, it depends on how you define the term. Or some of the other things like our following up, evidence processing, report writing, some administrative tasks. Does that count as for calls for service? And so when somebody asks the police department, how many calls for service did you go on? And we say 90,000 calls for service in the last 12 months, 116,000 or 124,000. Those all could be accurate numbers, but it depends on how you define the term call for service. So another thing that's going to come up with this data dashboard too is that there's conflicting priorities when presenting and examining data. So the Columbia Police Department has hundreds of thousands of records that we utilize, you know, from a year to year basis. And if we just gave you all of those in an Excel document, like or a CSV file or some sort of database file, that's going to be very hard to ingest and to examine. And so when we publish the data in this data dashboard, we had to make choices on how to present the data. And so the two conflicting problems with our transparency dashboard is the issue of do you map every offense or do you map every incident? And we define an incident as like a single event. So somebody, let's say we get called to a house and it's domestic disturbance, but there's also a child abuse and drugs that are at that. So that's one incident, but there might be three or four different offenses. And so when we map the data, and do you map just the incident or do you map the offense? And if you map the offense, it might look like when you're looking at the map data that this is a really bad street. You know, there was 10 crimes that occurred here in the last day or the last 2 weeks or whatever the time frame that you're looking at. When in reality, it was one police incident. And so what you'll see on the transparency dashboard is that we've prioritized incidents over offenses. And that affects the crime data as you're looking at it. So the other thing when it has to do with crime data, when you're looking at it, is there's preferences in how to consume the data. So we'll get deeper into the weeds about what's a crime against society, what's a crime against property, and what's a crime against a person. But those are kind of the three broad categories for NIBRS. Or our crime reporter. Yeah.
I have a question. What do you mean when you said prioritize incidences? How is that prioritized?
So I'm saying prioritizing incidents over offenses. Like we have an either or choice, right? We could map all of the offenses out, mm-hmm. you know, and look at the data that way, or we could map all of the incidents out. We can't do both on a map. You have to either choose, are we mapping the offenses or are we mapping the incident?
So when you say prioritize, you mean each one of these flags is an incident.
Correct. Each one of the flags on the transparency dashboard is an incident. And the highest call type, so if it was a homicide, rape, and a drug offense, the homicide will be plotted, but the rape and the drug offense will not be on there if that all happened under one police call, one incident. So because if we mapped all three of them, it's kind of easy with three, but what if there was 10 or 12 offenses that occurred under a single incident? Then it looks very differently.
So in this case, someone might be arrested for three offenses, but it's one incident.
Correct.
Is there any way to cross-reference the offenses to be able to see where there is a prevalence of lower offenses, or is it purely incident based?
Sure, there's certainly a way that like the Columbia Police Department, the transparency dashboard is one shallow cut into crime stats. And there's certainly different ways that us at the police department are interacting with that data to guide responses and to guide the deployment of resources. And so this is the transparency dashboard that's on there is just one level of analysis. That analysis tree goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, but there is, I think, improvements that can be made to this transparency. The transparency dashboard that we have that's modeled through this software called Esri, that is on the city's website. This can grow more complicated to it, but at some point, like I said, it already is so complicated that do you make it more complicated for like kind of end level users? That's the question, really. So the different preferences in consuming data, and I think there's two examples that I think come right to the top of mind. One is robbery. So robbery is classified as a crime against a person, or I'm sorry, it's not classified as a crime against a person, it's classified as a crime against property. Robbery at its very fundamental level is assault and theft equals robbery. So somebody has a, you know, through threat of force is acquiring property is what a robbery is. And so there's a good question about whether or not you could classified as a crime against a person or a crime against property. How NIBRS, the National Incident-Based Reporting System, has decided to classify that is under crimes against property. And so with some of this, it's like we either need to, the whole, and we'll get into NIBRS, but the whole idea of crime reporting is to be able to evaluate in an apples to apples way our crime data versus crime data in other communities. And that becomes impossible if we start kind of customizing how we're going to report crime or however we're going to share crime in this way with the public. And so there's a very compelling case to make robbery a crime against a person, but it's just not. And so the preferences in how to consume data. Another thing that we talk about is like homicide numbers. So NIBRS, if there's a double homicide where two people are killed in the same incident, that's reported in NIBRS as one homicide event. Now, we very much at the police department count homicides and the number of victims that there are. But when we report homicides to the state and then to the federal government, the FBI is the collector of crime stats, that gets reported as a homicide event that has occurred. So, you know, this is just kind of true of any kind of crime data, but manipulating statistics is easy if the context is removed. And that we can manipulate this data and massage this data to support any kind of political narrative that we'd like to, by just tailoring your sample size and tailoring your timeframes in which you're comparing. But just want to say that in general before we move on. And then I also want to say that crime data represents a moment in time. And that these crime statistics are a snapshot of when they were created. And, you know, my counsel to all of you is that, you know, that talking points might not remain true for very long, especially the closer in time we look at the sample size. If we're comparing 2 months data to the previous 2 months data, so we have our whole entirety of the look back is 4 months, you know, that stuff is going to be stale in a matter of days as opposed to weeks. And so my recommendation to you is that the longer your look back period, the more kind of robust that observation is going to be. So that's it for kind of my spiel on crime data. Yeah.
We had some discussion. Okay.
Yeah.
We had some discussion actually. Jill gave us a report. I remember this being before the most recent shooting downtown, but things happen so quickly that I'm not sure the exact timing. But I think that there was some discussion about an increase in staffing that on downtown that related to an increase in self-reported crimes.
Crimes against society and how with proactivity.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if there's a way to, because you gave us a report with the numbers removed from self-reported entries from, you know, both data sets. So we're comparing apples to apples throughout our own database, essentially. Are we viewing that with an apples to apples comparison in terms of that productivity self-entered in this database? And is there a way to look at, you know, filter out those so we can look at that data with and without staffing or maybe reported?
Yeah, I think I understand what you're asking. We call that self-initiated activity.
Yeah.
So if an officer pulls over a car and finds drugs in the car, as we are doing more traffic stops year over year, and as traffic enforcement has increased, there are more opportunities for the officer to discover the crime occurring than there were if we had a lower staffing number, not as much time, quite as much time for productivity and things like that. It's going to be very hard to look through at the transparency dashboard and make any kind of balls and strikes arguments on that.
I think one of my frustrations here is exactly what you said, that without context, it's very easy to misinterpret data. And on this dashboard, it's not clear what the context is. And I wouldn't have known that that is an aspect of our data if it hadn't been presented to us. And also, like you said, a week later, that report is now old and conclusions drawn may no longer be valid, but I don't know, I can't view today's data compared to last year's data without that increased productivity kind of baked into it. And, you know, years from now, that may fall out in relevance because we'll have a history of data to compare to.
It's very similar to if we undertake an initiative to crimes of
power. Chill, yeah. Which you might.
Sure.
Crimes that we know are underreported, like rape, sexual assault, right? Mm-hmm. In the past, we've undertaken initiatives to try to increase reporting. Well, was it the fact that more people reported, or was it the fact that there's actually an increase in sexual assault? So it's the same thing you're talking about. It's really hard to ever figure that out, but I think that's a good example.
The confounding variables, looking at bottom line crime stats, the confounding variables are going to be very difficult to suss out. They're difficult for us to suss out as the command staff of the police department. And we're in this data every day looking at everything that we can look at. And it's going to be very difficult to get the context of that, which is why you have an excellent police chief that can help provide the context for the numbers.
So can I ask this question now, because I don't want to lose it? With all that in mind and how difficult it is to perhaps even draw conclusions, how do you all use the data that you are collecting? And I know that you are, to determine where resources are deployed, where and where you need to be putting an emphasis at any given time.
Yeah, I'll skip ahead, but I want you to do that. So there's two different things. One, from on the patrol perspective, is that staffing continues to be a challenge to Columbia Police Department, right? I can't tell you how much infinitely better we are compared to let's call it pre-July and post-July, but it's still challenging. And so the biggest crime or the biggest statistics that we interact with from a patrol level are using it as management tools to evaluate, hold officer productivity accountable, to balance workload. Like the low-hanging fruit from a statistics from my chair is in the management of employees as much as it is for the guidance of deployment. If you look at this kind of crime stats that we have here, murder is just way too generic of a category to guide resource deployment. One, because there's a bunch of different homicides, or there's a bunch of different motivations for homicide. You know, over the course of the last couple of years, what we've seen is gang-related homicides trending down, or everything's trending downward. But this past couple of years, we've had three or four road rage homicides over the last 2 years, or at least shootings, and some of them have been ruled justifiable. We've had a rise of domestic violence-related homicides as a motivation behind it. So while homicides have really trended way down, the motivations for the homicides are different. And so by just looking at this like kind of bottom line murder number or homicide number, it doesn't, unless you're digging further into it to kind of look at the reasons behind this, it doesn't really help guide resource deployment. What absolutely helps guide resource deployment is where are the shootings at or happening at? And we've started engaging with a report our analyst has worked out called Hot Streets, which looks at street segments and where crimes are occurring. I wanted to kind of just bring up, briefly touch on, Denver PD uses a model where they take a look at where past crime data has occurred or incidents have occurred. They try to a certain degree predict where there's most likely to be kind of a rash of a specific crime. And they send officers there to do nothing but their computer system generates a call for service. The officer gets dispatched to that street area, and then they are out on foot patrol on that street area during that time frame in which there's kind of past history is most likely to be indicate that something's going to occur. The problem with the Columbia Police Department is we just don't have the staffing capacity yet to do anything like that. If the chief were to ask me to do that, I'd tell her how bad of an idea this is, because we're going from call, you know, a lot of times we're going from call to call to call to call. And there needs to be more capacity to do some more data-driven deployments, strategies like that would be my kind of response to that. So we are absolutely using the data to guide resource deployment. But it's more nuanced than anything that'll be on this transparency portal. And we're using a lot of other metrics that we're looking at officer productivity, like how many reports does an officer take per shift? Is that close to their peers on a per shift basis? You know, all the kind of things that you might do as managing employees kind of standpoint. All right, well, I want to talk
I've got a couple questions. And I apologize because these are super in the weeds. The first question is on the controlled vocabulary of the dashboard. It sounds like you're using the NIBRS mm-hmm. terms for defining the crimes. But it looks like at least on the crime trends, some of these, there are a few different ways they get entered. So like aggravated assault versus assault aggravated.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you.
The question is just like, is that intentional or is that we're starting in this and it will get figured out down the line?
So what we've had various compliance with the NIBRS standard since 2018, October of 2018. And the short answer is that in our profession, pick lists grow, they never shrink. Because once a crime has been categorized as an aggravated assault, or let's use robbery, for example, I think it's better on here. Once someone's classified as a robbery, then let's say the next year, from direction from a variety for a variety of reasons, this could get directed to the Columbia Police Department about we need to split up robbery, the NIBRS code of robbery. And we need to know if it's a robbery of a commercial convenience store. We need to know if it's a robbery with a handgun. We need to know if it's a robbery with a strong arm victim. And we start categorizing these differently now for a period of time. Well, how do you compare strong arm robberies year over year when we just started looking at strong arm robberies this year? Does somebody go back in time and read tens of thousands of police reports to decide if this is a robbery or if this is a strong arm robbery or if this is an armed robbery? And the answer is like, sometimes yes. That's what we did in the exercise in 2023, which is we had staff that reread all of 2023's police reports in order to correctly characterize crime data, which was a massive undertaking by that staff. And so the thing is once something gets picked on a pick list, it's hard then in next year when we have this, somebody has an idea of hey, we need to start measuring this. And it's like, okay, but now how do we measure it against what happened last year? And how do we go back through all of that data to recategorize that data? So at some point there are some naming convention changes or there's things, and this is the way that that pick list shows the way that we have categorized data and year. And when we get into this, I'll show you like some examples of where you can kind of suss out when that changed and when that didn't change.
My next question was going to be about neighborhoods, but I think that's coming up on your list of things to talk about, so I'll probably hold on.
Yeah, neighborhoods is the neighborhoods in here, and some of this was a canned report from this vendor, software vendor, and so it uses neighborhoods, which we don't track. We track addresses by police department beat, and so the neighborhoods column on here shows the police department beats. And we can go through that here in a minute too.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So when you're talking about the classification for the pick list, as the pick list becomes more and more specific and more refined, when you enter that data, do you have or do you use the ability to have kind of a generalized pick a top level category as well as whatever the specific one is? Or as the pick list becomes more refined, do we lose the ability to track the larger grouping that it's specified out of?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so if you go to this, the National Incident-Based Reporting Systems handout on the that I attached to this document, what you see is it's a list of offenses along with the offense code and whether that's a crime against person, property, or society. And so if you look, let me try to find robbery here quickly. So like robbery is on page, the pages aren't numbered, but it's in alphabetical order. You can see the robbery class goes to 120 there. And so there's a top level code. That 120 is the top level code. And then robbery strong arm, robbery with a handgun, robbery whatever, all fill into 120. And so it's really more of a problem when you start with 120 and then you try to separate things out than it is when you separate things out. They're still all feeding to 120, which is our top line, kind of our bottom line robbery number.
Great. Thanks.
So Nivers talked a little bit about it, but this really started out in the UCR, Uniform Crime Reporting, started in the 1920s. A group of police chiefs got together, and there was this issue of how do we compare crime numbers? Different cities are reporting, hey, our city's the safest. And then another city is going, no, our city's the safest. and so there had to be like it's new on the top of this document. I wrote, it's nuanced, context matters, and how you count the beans changes the numbers, right? How you count the beans changes the numbers. And so they agreed on how the beans were going to be counted. So this UCR was like the precursor to NIBRS. And UCR was a summary reporting system. So where I was talking about before about how if you only count the highest level offense, that's what UCR did. It only counted the highest level offense. There's only one offense per incident. Then the FBI and the International Association of Chiefs of Police got together and said, hey, we would like to look at all of the incidents that are in all of the offenses that are in an incident. And we'd like those to be reported. And so NIBRS born out of that. In I think NIBRS started in the late 1980s, but it wasn't mandatory or compulsory until 2021. That's finally when the federal government tied tax dollars to the states enforcing compliance with this national reporting standard. So that happened in 2021. We went live with it in 2018. We were buying a new records management system at the time. And when we bought the new records management system, we were trying to future-proof it a little bit, make sure it was NIBRS compliant. And so we started NIBRS reporting in October of 2018, but it didn't go live until October of 2021. And what you'll kind of see is from 2018 through 2023, varying compliance with that directive and with that. And so it was really a fundamental shift in our records unit. Our records unit before current year really thought that, you know, really said their mission was to memorialize the work product that the officers created. The records kind of mandate and marching orders going forward is that they're responsible for ensuring the correctness of the data that they're managing. So it's kind of two different philosophies of how to think about what our kind of records bureau's job was. But it's a lot easier to get the six or seven people involved in that unit pulling in one direction than it is for the 145 officers that all kind of have different thoughts on things. And so in 2024, or the end of 2024, they read all, the records unit read all of 2023's police reports. They made sure that they were coded correctly. 2024's reports are coded correctly. 2025's reports are coded correctly. And so I'd encourage when we're looking for an apples to apples comparison that we look back to 2023 and before that, the data is, I'm not saying it's not good, but it's not as good as it is post 2023. Okay, so now we're on to NIBRS. We've talked a little bit about locally. The one thing I'd just like to really just kind of touch on too is that we really truly don't know what the underlying crime rate is at the city of Columbia. We have no idea. We can make some guesses at it. There's some metrics that we can look at towards it, but we don't know what's not reported to us. And I think that there's a that customer service absolutely plays a key into that, and our relationship between the police and the reporting population or the victimized population. And so we can imagine, and we've seen it nationally, that immigrants are less likely to report being the victims of a crime than non-immigrants. And so I think, you know, we've talked kind of internally a lot about sexual assault in the homeless population. What is that? We know that crime that's occurring in some of these camps is way underreported. And so there's an unknown. And then the customer service piece of it too is last year, our staffing was in such a state that it was sometimes we had a larceny call from a shoplifting call from Walmart where the suspect wasn't in custody. It might be 3, 4, 5 hours before we had a cop available to respond to take that report. So with some of these businesses, the business is already done, closed, and the employees have gone home before we have a cop that's available to take the report. And so that report, we get called in, we get notified of it, but that never makes its way into the transparency dashboard because we don't have the full information that we need to complete a police report. And so there's a group of businesses that just stopped calling because their response times were so long for some of these kind of minor thefts that they stopped calling. And so again, that is going to, you might look, we're down year over year for larcenies, but the context matters, right? It's like we're down year over year, not because larcenies aren't happening, it's because the victims aren't reporting them because we don't have the staff to provide the service to get the data into the system to to make it. So I know for sure that was occurring, but to what extent, it's kind of hard to tell. The other thing I want to say is that less than 10% of police calls generate a police report. So what the transparency dashboard is a summary of information that officers have entered into our records management system.
Can you say that one more time?
Yeah, less than 10% of calls. So we get a call. So like I told you, the calls for service numbers, it depends on how you define the term. It's either 90, 116, or 124,000 a year. But we take about 10,000 police reports a year. So less than 10% of the calls for service, so when somebody calls the police, less than 10% of the time, we actually complete a police report on that event. Most of the time, it's handled without a police report. A lot of times it's because, there's a whole lot of reasons for that. People aren't reporting a crime. They're reporting something weird, but it's not necessarily criminal in nature. The officer investigates it and it's like nothing really has occurred here. Or it could be child custody exchanges, or somebody's got questions, or there's a whole lot of reasons why we have calls that don't result in police reports, but the majority of them don't. So we have this total unknown amount of crimes that occurred. A subset of that are ones that people call in about, and a subset of that are what we take a report on. And then only a subset of the reports that we take, a subset of the reports that are entered into our records management system get reported to NIBRS. We take a fair amount of information reports where it's just like, hey, we're gonna document this and memorialize this, but a crime hasn't occurred. And so those don't get reported to NIBRS because we're reporting criminal activity to NIBRS, not necessarily just all police reports. Yeah.
Do we have a way? I always forget about this microphone.
Do we have a way to view the number of calls responded to compared to the number of reports filed mapped?
I'm sure we can. We don't look at you're kind of, I guess, getting into like where are we being inefficient to where officers are responding to, or
what areas get the most calls versus what areas have the most incidents.
Sure.
And they may be the same.
Well, if you look at our beat map geographically, our beats are a combination of calls for service and criminal investigations completed, and we try to keep all of our beats roughly equal in the terms of workload for officer, if that makes sense. And so we just did a re-examination of the beats last year, and we found out they're pretty close still. And so we decided not to change it. But 20 beat is got about the same number of total calls for service and total reports generated as 30 beat or 60 beat or any of the 8 geographic beats.
I was just going to add something that we're working our way back to as staffing goes up as well, that we use this data for, that I think was helpful that we did years ago, was comp stat style management meetings. And so looking at, we used to get a list of the top 10 locations for calls for service. And then we compared to that, the top 10 locations where we took police reports. And then we would see where those things overlapped. And no surprise, the always on that top 10 list was all three Walmarts. And I'm not picking on Walmart, it's just they're, it's well known, those are locations where we get a lot of calls and there's police reports that get taken. So then we look at those things overlap and go, okay, how do we influence this? How do we drive that number down? Can we get them to report shopliftings online? We try to come up with creative solutions to be more efficient. Or are there ordinances that we need to look at, just different things. So we're working our way back towards that. That's actually a huge piece of tomorrow is the kickoff of our new records management system project. So that's one of the things we're most excited about, or I am, I guess, coming out of this, is how we're going to be able to better use data in the system. So I just wanted to.
Yeah, no, the analytics piece of this new records management, our current records management system has virtually no analytics to look at, virtually none. And so that was a big need for us is getting analytics in the officer's hands to look at their geographic areas of responsibility, which we're excited about this this new product. One of the biggest check marks in it was that it has the, I think, the most robust analytics out of any police records management system available. So we'll get into the meat and potatoes here. The easiest way for me to get to the dashboard is to get it to it from the Columbia Police Department's website. So if you look at this crime data dashboard, that's where what we're really talking about. And so what you see here is the crimes against person, crimes against property, and crimes against society on this summary page. So the data in the dashboard goes back to 2023, and it's live up to 3 days ago. So we have a three-day window where it's live. Now, one of the things that I'll caution you on looking at is that the last 28 days data in this website as a whole is the least accurate for a bunch of different reasons. One is that it goes off of the date that the crime was reported to have occurred at. And a lot of times we might not get notified that a crime occurred the day it occurs. But a lot of times we don't get notified for a week later. And so by the very nature of trying to make this as live as possible, we're also saying that the last kind of month is inaccurate. If you had a burglary at your house that you discovered a week later, and then you call the police and you got them on your surveillance camera, and we have a date and time of when the burglary actually occurred, this data will go back and update, you know, and add one to the burglary count from the week before. But so that's why I'm saying the last 28 days is the least accurate. Okay. What this summary slide is missing, and as this evolves, we're gonna add this in. It's missing what we call the Group B offenses. And if you look at the NIBRS pamphlet that I attach to this later, you'll see that Group A offenses are most of the just kind of the heavy hitters of what criminal activity is. What it does not include Group B offenses on this summary page, and I wish that it would. If you go into both the public crime map and the crimes trends dashboard, we can look specifically at the Group B offenses, but this summary page does not include the Group B offenses. So my ask of what this page will hopefully look like in the future is to add a block down at the bottom here with the Group B offenses. And the Group B offenses are, and they're listed, I think, on the last page there. Bad checks, vagrancy violations, disorderly conduct, driving under the influence, drunkenness, family offenses, liquor law violations, runaways, peeping toms, trespass, and all other offenses. And so the Group B offenses, let's go ahead and look at those right now. I'm going to go into the crime trends dashboard. And under this NIBRS code here, I'm going to go into this Group B offenses. And so I think Councilwoman Carroll's point earlier about if you can see this year-to-date column, we have year-to-date, we've had 2,540 arrests for Group B violations, compared to a year ago, year to date. So January 1 through 11, it'll actually be 10/31 of 2024. We have a 59% increase on Group B offenses. So when we're talking about the increased enforcement that we've been doing downtown, we also had another initiative where we've increased enforcement in the Connolly Road corridor. Things like trespassing, liquor law violations, all of the kind of proactive quality of life, misdemeanor crime enforcement, that's going to be a huge driver of total crime rate this year. It's going to be the 1,000 more cases and arrests we made for these Group B offenses. So the Group B offenses only get counted on the arrest. They don't get counted. So if we take a report on trespassing, but we don't make an arrest, we don't report that to the state or to the FBI. We only make the report to the state or the FBI as if we've made an arrest. And that's just part of the NIBRS rules for. So does the Group B offense stuff make sense? I know that this has been kind of a.
Can you run through what those are again exactly?
Yeah, so they're on.
Have a better idea, and I guess I'm wondering why we didn't have that in that summary page.
Yeah, you know, it's ongoing. We're going to continue to tweak this. But the Group B offenses, and some of these offense titles don't make a lot of sense for Missouri. But remember, this is a national. You know, we don't have a loitering charge, as been very publicly commented on in the last couple weeks. But there is a loitering charge on this Group B offense because they have to make it a way that all municipalities and agencies in the country can report to it. So the Group B offenses are bad checks. And in Boone County, bad checks are actually investigated by the prosecutor's office directly. There's a report you make. So if we get a bad checks call, we refer them to the prosecuting attorney's office. You have curfew, loitering, and vagrancy violations, disorderly conduct, driving under the influence, drunkenness, which we don't have a charge for. Family offenses, liquor law violations, peeping toms, runaways, trespassing on real property, that's going to be a huge driver of this number. And then all their offenses. And you can see they're all coded to 90. So all the 90 offenses are coded to this Group B offenses.
And you said they only get reported if there's an arrest.
Correct.
Is that if there is an arrest for this offense or if there's an arrest for something else? And then it's also a Group B offense, it would get reported.
No, an arrest for trespassing by itself would add one to this number that we're looking at right here. I know I've kind of jumped around here too. I will say that on the data dashboard, I'll go back to the summary page. Okay. When I say that the last 28 days is least accurate, every one of these graphs is going to end in a downturn far to the right because the crimes are never, when I say they're inaccurate, they're never going to be overreported for the last 28 days, but they're almost always going to be underreported for the last 28 days. So all of these graphs are going to be showing down, this one's sideways, but I mean, that number right here, 33, for the last 28 days is underreported, not overreported.
Am I understanding that what you're saying by that last data point being underreported is that as you proceed, it may very well go up once you enter in crimes where they determine the date on afterwards?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons it's underreported. Another big reason is too is that the reports have to be reviewed and locked by several layers of review prior to that data being included on this dashboard. And so the officer has to write the report, the supervisor has to approve the report, and records has to approve the report. As part of making sure that this data is accurate and records change in mission from being focused on just memorializing the officer's work product to being responsible for the correctness of the data that has been included, there's a records review. And so between the officer supervisor and the records review, sometimes it can take longer than 3 days. 3 days should be the case, but if we have a big event that occurs, like we have a homicide late at night or some sort of significant event late at night, like none of the reports from that shift are going to get done that shift because the officer's already here multiple hours for overtime just to work that event. Okay. I know I've spent a lot of time talking here, but we'll go real quickly through the public crime map. So we talked about the list, to your point, we already talked about that the lists in this profession grow and they never shrink. I was actually looking at crime call types from the early 70s, and one of the crime call types was annoying females, was the name of the crime call. And it wasn't that the females that were annoying, it was like men and catcalling at women. But anyways, that was a crime type in the early 70s. And so we don't have a crime type of annoying females anymore. But that crime type would be classified under something else now. And so now, if you were to look at with whole completely different crime types from the 70s versus now, how do you make an apples to apples comparison? And it's really difficult.
I have a crime type question.
Yeah.
I'm seeing on here under the heading crime types, overdose.
Mm-hmm.
Is overdose its own crime category, or is that being reported for another reason?
Overdose locations are something that we've tracked. I don't know if that's a NIBRS reportable offense, Lance.
Yeah, I mean, there's possession of controlled substances, exception, an umbrella that makes it not an arrestable offense in the state. They're using a controlled substance in the commission of the overdose. There was a crime that occurred.
Right.
It's not arrestable if they are seeking medical.
Right.
It might be.
It's on the map.
Yeah, it might be reported under. I'll have to get back to you on that because it might be reported under possession of a controlled substance.
Yeah.
Like it might be a 35A violation.
And I know there's a lot of data. Sometimes it's like you said, we count the beans differently every time.
Yep.
Overdoses, obviously everybody knows this was a big issue, you know, over the last 5 years because we saw such an uptick in the early 2020s. And so there was a lot of data and collection points that wanted to be captured. So they could have added a point on here.
Yeah. And that was kind of what surprised me because there's only one listed. So I was thinking if we were tracking this, there would probably be.
So we actually have
Lance. I'm going to ask you to come. I should have done that sooner.
This is not
one in the last 28 days.
Oh, okay.
So the crime map defaults to the last 28 days of crime. So that's why you only see the 571. And again, that 571 is likely way underreported than the actuality of it.
So the one thing I'll say is it on?
I think it's on.
Okay. The one thing I'll say about overdoses are a very difficult thing for us to track. There could be an overdose investigation that leads to a arrest for murder second that will be categorized in the murder offenses when we report it to NIBRS. There could be an overdose that results in a distribution of a controlled substance. So it could hit several different categories. So I don't know exactly the background on that. I do know it's a data point we do track internally at the Columbia Police Department. We actually have a separate database we created just for overdose tracking. So I don't know if I clarified that or confused the question, but there's a lot of ways you can count an overdose investigation. So
it did clarify, and it sounds like it's just a intro onto a new database problem, but I would love to see it not listed under the heading crime types.
I just want to draw attention to the time. We can go a little bit past 6 o'clock, I think, but just want to keep that in mind in terms of.
Yeah, I'll wrap it up in 5 minutes or so, and then
there may be some
plenty of time for questions. The one thing I'd like to tell you about the police crime map when you're working on this is if you zoom in to an area of the map, the crime total over here, it only shows you what is in the screen mapped. So that can. It certainly has confused. I fielded a couple questions about that. So these filters up here will let you kind of dig into this a little bit further. You can filter the dates that you're looking for. So if you wanted to create two different reports to compare year over year, the NIBRS offense category, That's right here. You can look at weapon type and case status. Yes, ma'am.
You talk about calls
that are excuse. So whenever we're looking at crimes in neighborhoods, we often pull out crimes that are at 600 East Walnut. So if you look for, again, how you count the beans. So when Joint Communications receives a 911 call for service and they don't know what location it occurred in the city, but they think it occurred in the city, they throw it at the Columbia Police Department, that this crime occurred at the Columbia Police Department. And so, because we have to have an address, because everything's tracked by addresses here. And so when you're looking at crime data downtown specifically, you got to be really careful about whether or not you're looking at calls for 600 East Walnut or you're not looking at calls for 600 East Walnut. Because we always pull that back out to look at data because we don't know that it occurred there.
Do we have a way to pull that out when we're viewing the dashboard?
Probably not. Probably not is the answer. All of the addresses on this dashboard are generic to the block range, the street segment. So we're not putting the specific address out there. So the crime data dashboard, very quickly, or the crime trends dashboard, I'm sorry. We talked a little bit about the group B offenses that we picked on a slider over here. The other thing I'd like to tell you too is, and there's not what the other request that I'm having to update our the summary page is to include a violent crime summary. So violent crime is something that I think that everybody in the community is kind of concerned about. But what does that mean when you actually look at what does violent crimes mean? It's not crimes against persons. The NIBRS definition of violent crime includes murder, non-negligent manslaughter, forcible rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. And so if you ever wanted to look at what's our kind of crime data or where we're at violent crime wise, you could go into these NIBRS codes and pick those specific entries to look at our violent crime rate. So I wanted to give that definition there, which is the bullet point under this crime data dashboard. You know, the other thing that I'd like to just say with this too is, if you look at our shots fired numbers and you look at just the category of shots fired on the crime type, that's not going to show you every incident where a gun was fired in Columbia, because if it was a homicide, if it was a rape, if it was an aggravated assault, like some of those shots fired are going to be in these other crime categories and they're not going to be double counted both in the shots fired and the other crime category. And so I'd like to just kind of guess go towards my recommendations here, which is when you interact with this data, my encouragement for you folks is to make your searches as broad as possible. So if you look at and we could look into robbery here specifically, but it's very clear here when there was a change in the robbery coding definitions, because you can just toggle the box on and off and be like, oh, in 2023, we had no robberies. Well, that's not true, right? It was just toggled on these one of the things. So when you search for robberies, search for all of the robberies. And the larger the date range you can do, the better. And so with these shots fired, when the chief was making some statements about how shots fired were down year over year in response to some of the inquiries that she was having, I think she gave the numbers of year to date in 2023, we had about 100 shots fired cases. And year to date in 2025, we had about 50. And if you went and you looked just at the data on the dashboard, you would have seen something like 96 and 48. Like the numbers weren't exactly the same, but the trends are going to be apparent, even though the specific counts might be one or two off, depending exactly on how you're counting the things. And so I'm encouraging you to make your searches as broad as possible, both in time and crime categories, and be less focused on matching exact numbers and more focused on broader trends. And then the other thing too is that a big thing that's gonna make these numbers go up or down is what is police staffing, and how many resources do we have available to throw? What are our clearance rates? You know, if we're making more arrests, are we making more arrests because we have a higher percentage of crimes being reported to us, or is it because we're solving a higher percentage of those crimes? Like those things are gonna be like unclear just on a base look at the at some of the data, but the confounding variables are very real, and I'd caution you against making causation statements based on the data.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. I imagine there are still questions. I haven't heard from this side of the table.
Yep.
This might be also for Chief Schlitty. So in the conversations that have been taking place most recently, there have been references to the data. And there has been disagreement about what the data means. So what conclusions are you all coming to so far? And I'm thinking about this particularly in terms of what actions the council might make. And among the actions that we've taken over the past few years is to address the need for more police officers by increasing pay, establishing our own police academy, and so forth. But moving forward, how might these numbers guide what council does in terms of policy?
So I think that, you know, these Group B offenses are absolutely driving up the total crime rate, you know, as reported, but that's not the underlying, the question I'm most concerned with answering is total crime down or up? And that's the unknown number. Is that down or up? Just because we're not making the arrest for trespassing doesn't mean the trespassing didn't occur. And so I'll say that, you know, what these numbers show is that, you know, crimes against, the violent crime is up year over year. It's up, I don't know, something like 15%, but that's being largely driven by aggravated assaults and largely driven by domestic aggravated assaults. And so our homicides were very low compared to, you know, year over year, 11 to 3. And so the traffic fatalities are very low year over year, but some of this data, I mean, crime, like total crime, reported crime is up. But what's the conclusion from a policymaking standpoint? Lance can have your answer.
No, yeah, absolutely. The only thing
I'm not sure that Mike's working.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know that anybody else in the room has an opinion, but yeah, that's fine right there. That one is.
I'm just going to jump in here on the data points where I think it really can affect you guys. If you look at our benchmark city stuff, one thing we do in the benchmark cities, we report all these crime data to our benchmark cities. We also report all the demographics of our police agency to the benchmark cities. And what we're able to do with that, we're kind of able to compare where we are at to our counterparts, right? Because when we find cities that have equal rates of violent crime, property crimes, crimes against society, equal size and demographics, and their police agency is 270 people, we're like, okay, we need to expand the size of our police agency, right? If their budget is 20 to 30% larger than ours, we say we need to expand that. Or if we're on point with them, we say we're appropriately sized. We try to benchmark ourselves against comparable cities, and crime data is a big, big component of that. Because if we take 120,000 people and we compare it to, I don't know, pick the highest crime area in the country, that's not an apples to apples comparison because they're having 90, 100 homicides in that same area, you know? So I think the crime data, where it's important for us is when we look at those benchmark cities and those indexes, they're able to identify comparable agencies that we should really be looking to see if we're consistent with our counterparts. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest thing is don't let the context of the minor offenses increasing because our customer service is increasing, because our relationship with the victimized population is allowing for more of these people to be reportable. Don't let that influence. Like we're going in the right direction with enforcement. We're going in the right direction in these areas, but I think the data can be manipulated into making it look like we're not.
I think one of the most important points Mark made on that topic was, as a command staff, we have great concern that things have become more and more underreported the longer we've been understaffed, if that makes sense. Now, how can we ever prove what's been not reported? Well, we can't. But we do know there's been a level of frustration over the years with the customer service we've been able to provide. So we have felt like, we call these I feel statements when we have meetings, but if people don't feel like they can get a response and a timely response to something, they just stop calling. I mean, that's a pretty common human response. And so as we've not been able to respond to things as quickly or even follow up, right? I mean, if you can't, ideally an officer that's dealing with any type of crime or calls for service in their beat should be able to follow a call through till its logical end, whether that's on the same day or they come back their next shift and do some follow up and some, you know, investigation, things like that. That's just been nearly non-existent when they were starting a shift with 10 or 12 officers. So as that capacity grows, we're hoping people will get back in the habit of feeling comfortable and like they're going to get a response from us from reporting things. And we're going to work that case through to its logical conclusion. Lance, of course, loves when we don't refer everything to detectives, but there was a time when it felt like that was the only option, but it wasn't a great option because he's just as understaffed as patrol is. So, you know, it's that, you know, apples and oranges type conversation that we get into, but when you have 10 or 12 officers on a shift and they don't have time to go pick up videos the next day to do follow-up or go get a piece of evidence or go interview a witness, all that gets pushed off on detectives. And I told you guys in other meetings, there were times where we had one person assigned to all the property crimes in the city. So what level of service are we providing? So people just kind of give up sometimes, I think. So as we build back that capacity, I think we're gonna see another increase in reporting just because we're able to be more responsive. How do you track all that stuff? I'm not sure that you can, but I'm not going to be surprised if some of these numbers go up the more we get staffed.
Anything else? All right. Thank you so much. Gives us a lot to think about. And I'm really going to encourage everyone to do what I intend to do is go back and look at your summary here and refresh our minds with that. Valerie, did you have something?
Thank you.
I was going to ask if we can have a digital version of this. And also, actually, if this kind of summary information could be made available to the public, I think that would be really helpful for this. One of my concerns is that it is nuanced data, and it can be interpreted any manner of ways. The context is not apparent on the dashboard, so it can be misused any number of ways, whether or not the person is intending to do so or not. So, you know, maybe having guides and disclaimers available to the public will help people be aware of where the pitfalls are.
Yeah, and I put it in the summary document here, but there's going to be some changes to this dashboard. We started out with which was more or less the canned report from Esri, which is the vendor on this. But there's a ways to go to make it more transparent, more user-friendly, and explain a little bit more of the things. So I think to the point of like some of the disclaimers, have some of this on here is absolutely the intent over the next, you know, over this winter.
Thanks.
That's a good point, because we really want the public to be able to use this and to draw the right conclusions from it. All right, thanks. I'm gonna offer a motion in a moment to go into closed session and just say that we'll take a quick break in case anybody wants to go get something to eat between that. So I move that the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A1B of City Hall to discuss confidential and privileged communications between a public governmental body or its representatives and its attorneys pursuant to Section 610.0211 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri and Operational Guidelines, Policies, and Specific Response Plans developed, adopted, or maintained by any public agency responsible for law enforcement, public safety, first response, or public health to use in responding to or preventing any critical incident which has the potential to endanger individual or public safety or health pursuant to Section 610.02119D of the Revised Statutes of Missouri as required by Section 610.02219D. The City Council hereby declares that disclosure of information to be discussed in closed session pursuant to this section of the Sunshine Law would impair the public governmental body's ability to protect the security or safety of persons or real property, and that the public interest in non-disclosure outweighs the public interest in disclosure of the records. Can I have a second?
Second.
Don, thank you. And I'll call roll now. Ms. Elwood? Ms. Sample?
Yes.
Ms. Foster, yes. Ms. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo? Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
All right.